Welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 41. I'm your host, Laura. I'm here this week with Tilly.
Hi.
Gemma.
Hello.
And Kate.
Hey.
Woo, we're all here. We have geeky things to talk about. So I usually try and start the show off with something that we're all excited and happy about. But tonight, I want to hear something that Kate is angry and mad about. So Kate, do you want to kick us off tonight and talk about Minions?
Just to start off with something negative. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, if I think I've mentioned it on the podcast a few times before, but I work in a cinema, and obviously that has some fun times and some not so fun times. And the new Minions movie has come out. Now, one thing that I do have a problem with generally in Hollywood cinema today is unoriginal ideas. Like, we have a list at work of all the films that are going in that week, and most weeks we will go through them and there will not be a single original idea. It will be reboots and adaptations and sequels and reboots of adaptations of sequels, kind of, you know, loads and loads of things that are unoriginal. So the fact that the Minions movie exists already annoys me. But if anybody uses Facebook, and Tilly was literally guilty of this today, there's like the has anybody seen Despicable Me, the movies?
Yes, I've seen the original one.
Yeah, we're aware that the Minions are those little yellow things.
And the original movie is a really, really nice sort of family film. The second one I didn't think was all that, but it obviously did well enough for them to make the Minions movie, and they've been in a lot of short films as well. But I understand that kids like them, but there is a massive thing on Facebook of like mums and dads and, like, you know, basically middle-aged people on Facebook sharing like these Minion memes.
Basically, or, like, it's Minion people who are too old to actually understand what a meme is, but understand the concept is a picture with some words, and then basically it'll be like, oh, it's that Minion doing a thing that's vaguely relevant to the quote, and you can't disagree with the quote, so they share them on Facebook.
Okay. So the first, I've typed in Minion quotes onto Facebook, and 1,791,742 people like Minion quotes. And at the moment, okay, like, this is a perfect example. There is the little girl from Minions, and there's a picture of her, and it has next to it, "I'm not a bitch, I just have a low bullshit intolerance." Sorry, I just have a low bullshit tolerance.
Which
this
makes
feels like
no
eight.
Sense.
I'm pretty sure she does. Like, what?
Please, this is the thing I didn't understand about it as well. It's like, when I saw Despicable Me, I didn't realise that the Minions don't actually say words. They just make noises like...
They make noises and they say, I think, bottom and banana, because it's for kids. And that's funny. But like this one, when someone special enters your life unexpectedly, don't let them go, because they were probably brought into your life for a reason. I don't remember that being in the movie!
My favourite thing about these is I saw someone describe them as despicable memes, because they're from Despicable Me and they're memes. And since then, that is my general response, is anytime I see someone post them, I'm like, stop with those despicable memes.
Yeah. Oh, it's horrendous. Like, sometimes you need to be alone, not to feel lonely, but to enjoy your free time being yourself. The Minions are literally like a group of, like, there's thousands of them. So it doesn't even apply, because none of them want to be alone. They all want to be with their family, of which there are like 10,000 others. And I mean, it's just the awful quotes that are like,
they are, you know, evil, they are evil yellow banana flavored jelly beans with eyes.
Yes.
Like, they say the word banana sometimes, and they want to be evil. None of these quotes are relevant. Tilly, why would you post one of these? Tilly, why would you do this?
Why, Tilly? Explain yourself.
In my defense, I hadn't even woken up yet. I just saw the words and I was like, yeah, that's the kind of week I had. And then I hit share and I was like, ah, Minions.
I'm looking for the one that Tim shared this morning. So I was
literally like on a countdown, like, how long is it going to be before Kate kills me?
I want to have a look and see if I can find the one that Tilly shared. So give me one
the
moment.
The thing about a lot of these Facebook things, and it's the same with on Twitter, you know, like historical pics, earth pics, all those kind of sites. Twitter accounts that just post like interesting photos, they make millions of dollars from those websites, because they will have, you know, they'll post all these pictures and then all of a sudden it'll be interspersed with an advert. And somebody will have paid a fortune for that advert, because it's gonna reach like 6 million people, and you, like, that's like Super Bowl level of reaching an audience. But most of the time, the pictures aren't correctly attributed to who took them. Most of the time, they're incorrect. Like, there was one actually, and it kind of not backfired, but made a good point. When Caitlin, there was, you know, the whole Vanity Fair thing. Some like transphobic guy put up like a picture of some soldiers, like, oh, these guys are braver than Caitlyn Jenner, blah blah, you know, that kind of rubbish. And then it turned out that the soldiers were actually it was a staged picture of a guy who I think was a trans man and had been through loads of transphobic bullying in the army and made like an art exhibition out of it, like about it. So A, that kind of backfired on him, but B, like, these images travel around all the time and they're completely fake. And it's like with the Minion stuff, they make millions off the people who share them, because they will then intersperse it with an advertisement that they would have been paid an absolute fortune
for. That is just reminding me of the whole thing with Britain First, the wonderful Facebook page that's like, hey, share this if you think Princess Diana was wonderful, share this if you think that paedophiles are bad, share this if you think that everyone should be racist. Oh wait, did we just put that in your feed?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not suggesting that the Minions are fascists.
No, but... Okay, I'm going to read out what the meme was that Tilly shared, and it was one of the Minions doing, like, duck wing flapping arms and sticking its tongue out, and it says, it's been a rough week, but on a positive note, I didn't need any bail money, and I didn't have to hide any bodies. I don't remember the Minions ever doing either of those things.
So, my week, essentially.
Yeah, but that photo...
I didn't even see it. This was when I was still asking you if we decided to have a baby.
Yeah, Tilly woke up this morning, just rolled over and goes, did we just decide to have a baby? I'm like, no, we didn't. I had to sleep. So, yeah, memes. Oh, God, can I bring up the heterosexual pride awareness Facebook page we saw this week?
I saw this on Facebook, and I didn't have a chance to go through it, but it just looked hilarious.
Okay, so what was the page called?
Heterosexuals Inspiring Pride.
Okay, so basically the entire page is a load of... it's a load of comics made out of stolen clip art about, like, hating homosexuality. And just to describe one of them is, hey, here's a heterosexual man and heterosexual... Gone. Oh, have I gone? Hello.
Emma, are you there?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, it just went a bit fuzzy. Start the bit from, it's a load of comics.
Yeah, it's a load of comics that are made out of stolen Comic Sans that don't quite match each other in all different art styles. So this one I'm going to describe has four different people from four different art styles of clip art. So on the top, you've got a man smelling a rose and a woman with hearts above her head. And he's smelling the flower, and he's like, every time I stop and smell a flower, I like to think how beautiful you are and how much I love you. And the alternative side is a man going to the bathroom with his trousers down, sniffing between his legs, being like, every time I'm here, I think of you, and a man in a rainbow hoodie. And it then just heterosexuals inspiring pride at the bottom. It's like one of them has a bad clip art, like grey alien with his thumbs up standing in a puddle of liquid that's like, being heterosexual is cool, fun and popular.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
I looked at it. I was like, I'm sure this is probably serious, but I find this hilarious to look at as a piece of as if it was a piece of fantastically written satire.
My favorite is the one about the pickles.
Oh God!
The boy goes to his mum and he's like, "Mum, where do pickles come from?" And she's like, "Well, I don't know, son, but you definitely need one pickle and one thing of vinegar. You can't have two pickles and you can't have two things of vinegar. It just doesn't work." It's like, that's supposed to be a metaphor for heterosexuality. Well,
you know what the best part of that heterosexuality metaphor is? The picture isn't of a cucumber. It's of a cucumber-shaped vibrator. So, apparently someone had... Yeah, it's just... it's all just stolen clip art that... I really wish, I really hope it's fantastic satire and not just depressingly bad attempts at heterosexual pride month. Woo!
Oh, what was the other one that was really good? They had this story on there about how scientists are injecting babies with the gay gene. So that gay couples can have babies just like them.
Yeah, it's like, we don't believe that being... We believe being gay is a choice and not something that's biological. However, scientists have found the gay gene and they're injecting it into babies.
So if you're bisexual, did you, like, forget to get your booster jab of it and it, like, half ran out?
Something like that. So, yeah.
I think me and Tilly had a massive thing at Nine Worlds when people are talking about... randomly talking about gay school, and we were like, yeah, we dropped out halfway through.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, that was the thing we looked at this week, but anyway, we should probably stop giving that more popularity. Gemma, you've got a thing to talk about this week. You started playing Mass Effect.
Oh yes, yeah, finally. After considering this is now going to be my third year at Nine Worlds talking about LGBT inclusivity in games, I thought I should probably finally get to playing Mass Effect, considering that's the one that's always highlighted. Yeah, because I'm a lousy gamer.
Woo!
But yeah, so yeah, a few years late, but it turns out Mass Effect is rather a good game.
So yeah, how far are you into the first Mass Effect at the moment?
Not terribly far. I mean, I think I'm something like 5 hours in, so I seem to have assembled most of the members of the party I can choose from now, having just found Liara Tassoni.
Oh yeah, Liara's pretty awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
I like Liara.
I like how certain conversations, like with my FemShep, of course, and Caden. But also her and Liara immediately seem to descend into undertones.
Yeah, it's a little bit more nuanced by the time you get to Mass Effect 2, but the first Mass Effect is very much like, here is your 2 to 3 choices for your gender of character that are split across male and female. Which one of them that hints they want to bang you are you going to bang?
Yeah, so I'm having fun toying with that.
So have you led on multiple people, or are you going after one of them in particular?
I'm playing hard to get with Caden at the moment because, like, I just find it fun, but there's no way I'm interested in him.
Is Mass Effect a dating simulator?
It is a shooting game that is also a dating simulator set in space.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, save the universe from these universe-destroying entities that are coming to destroy us all. Also, pick someone to do some kissing with.
Kissing and other.
Kissing and other. Kissing and whatever kind of space sex you do with that species.
So, like, the woohoo of the Sims.
Well, yeah, having just asked Liara about Asari culture, and, like, she immediately went into mating rituals, which is like, okay.
Yeah, she's very much like, yeah, we mate for life because we're like 1,000-year-old beings, and you know, we just have like sensual mind sex with each other. So that's Asari culture.
Wow. In a way, it's a shame that Shepard can't convey my initial reactions. Her eyebrows would have been well up at that point. But yeah, no, I'm finding it really fun, and like, actually, I know that I'm not the only one who hasn't played Mass Effect, but I do encourage people who haven't played it yet to give it a go, because it actually has some really good, like, fairly solid feeling gameplay at the moment. I've heard from others that later games improve on it.
If you feel like this is solid, you are going to be very you're going to be very impressed by Mass Effect 2. That is so much more polished from a gameplay perspective. Once you've played Mass Effect 2, you will find it very hard to ever come back to this first one. Because it feels very, very ropey by comparison. But yeah, it is a nice thing to go see some, like, here's a Krogan, here's Liara, here's Garrus, who likes you, but he also needs to finish his calibrations. It's all fun. Also, there is a karaoke man singing in the background. So, he's very off-putting.
Yeah, actually, speaking of Garrus, I feel like an honourable mention should go to the subtle voice effects they have on the Turians. Like, I really like their voices.
Yeah, they
voices
have
a kind of a thing.
They do
for
have
me.
Really nice voices. So, yeah, you're playing space gaze with guns. Space gaze with guns.
Yeah, well, I'm undecided so far. She's currently going about things pretty pansexual, but the game is kind of geared towards always romancing women. I'm cool with that.
It's the game. By the time you get to the second one and the third, it is very much like every character you play as or that you might want to romance, they are pretty much all pansexual or bisexual. You very rarely get a character like, there is one character in Mass Effect 2 who has a set sexuality that is like, no, I am only attracted to this gender. And there's a couple of those, but like a lot of them is like, oh yeah, they'll just bang anyone.
I kind of want Kate to play this, though, because it is basically like half of it is trying to work out which upgrades to apply to my sniper rifle and pistols. Mm-hmm. And the other half is, do I go Lihara or Kaden?
Well, like, yeah, it's basically like space. You can get it on the Xbox, the PlayStation, PC.
Mass Effect. Okay.
Yeah, so imagine...
There's so many games to play, and it's annoying because I don't have a PlayStation 3 like it's at my boyfriend's, so I'm playing all of these games like about 5 times slower than everyone else.
Well, this is... My suggestion is, like, I think you'd like Mass Effect because it is Call of Duty in space with some kissing.
Yes.
I think we need to Kickstarter to buy me a PlayStation.
I can probably give you an old PS3 if you want one for yourself.
Oh my god,
I've got one I haven't used in quite some time.
Mom would be like, why is this in the house?
I've got one I haven't used in a
while. Shut up, Mom, take a controller, let's kill them.
I've been playing my PS4, so I'm like, well, there you go. Remind me before Nine Worlds and I'll throw one your way. I'm getting really distracted by this karaoke singer.
He sounds quite epic.
I just got an email saying, with the subject line, why Adolf Hitler wants this guy to be cold dead.
Sorry, I'm just going to...
Spam. Electricity must be free until he was murdered by Adolf Hitler's man to his hotel. This may be the most controversial video you ever seen. What's the truth behind Nikola's death? Apparently it's from Nikola Tesla. Like, he's emailed me.
Anyway, I'm going to turn this round so you can hear the karaoke man. I'm just going to... Oh, he stopped it. I was gonna turn my gain up so you could hear him sing karaoke. So you're enjoying Mass Effect then, Gemma?
Yes. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. I'm hoping to get my way through at least like Mass Effect 1 and 2 because they're the ones I have. I don't have Mass Effect 3. But yeah, and it's also kind of nice to be playing a console game again. I've ended up playing a lot of Steam games and mostly Cities Skylines in recent years. So given that I dragged this Xbox all the way over from Britain, like, it's one of the first things I brought over. So it's been sat around here for like a year and a half, and
it's
I'm finally
nice to
playing
finally
it.
Something to do with it, yeah. Woo! Yeah. Tilly, I think you're next up in the rotation. Do you want to talk about a book you read this week?
Yeah, I finally got around to reading the books that Kate's been recommending for ages. The Wool Trilogy by Hugh Howey, and it's really confusing. Like, I keep getting confused up until about halfway through, and then I'm like, oh, no, and everything like clicks into place, and I'm like, oh my god, I have to.
It's so good.
I have no idea what these books are about. Can you give me a synopsis of like what this is and why I should be reading it?
It's set in a dystopian future where everyone. There's no one living above ground. Everyone who is living in these massive underground silos. And every now and then someone is sent out for cleaning, which is to clean the cameras. And that basically means that they die. And there's this whole like conspiracy that, because people aren't allowed to say that they want to go outside or they want to see the outside. If they say that, they get sent to cleaning. And it's about like, several people in a row all say they want to go outside and they get sent out for cleaning. And they're trying to figure out why people say that, even though they know what the consequences will be. They still say they want to go outside and they still get sent out for cleaning. Because every single person says they won't do it, they won't do the cleaning, they'll just go outside and die. But every single person does once they get outside, then they do clean. And it's like this whole mystery as to like why they do that, and it goes back to like centuries before. And I'm halfway through Shift at the moment, which is the second one, And oh, they're just so good. I'm really enjoying them.
Really? Oh my goodness, you on Shift?
Yeah.
Shift was probably my favorite.
I'm halfway through Shift. I was really confused up until about halfway through. I was like, what's going on? Like, how does
it confused me?
How does this guy relate to this one? And why is this happening? And oh my god. And I got it. Like, holy shit.
The end of the first book I read like last year when I was on holiday, and then I didn't carry on for like a year. And then I picked up Shift and I was like, I can't remember any of this. Like, did I miss something? Because it's so different. But I think the second book was my favorite because, like, you've got, they do really good world building in the first book, you know, the whole silo and this dystopia. And then they just kind of, he not contradicts everything from the first book, but he takes a complete left turn in the second book.
He just, like
it goes for a complete. It goes storyline, and
it's not like a linear sort of progression through time. It's like things happen in the first book, and then you jump back like centuries to the second in the second book to find out what it was that sort of set everything in motion in the first book. It's so good.
Like, I really didn't think we were gonna get that much detail about why it all, because you know they're obviously in these silos and stuff, and towards the end of the first book, it's like hinting to why. But I thought just find it out, like, oh yeah, they'll just kind of explain it, but then he basically tells you the story of how it all happened.
Yeah,
it was very, I'm so like, impressed with it.
Really interesting.
So I need to read this then, do I?
Yeah, I gave the first book to my mum today. You can't leave it for a while. We can't read it for a while.
Oh, I was going to say, where does it fall on the scale of like better or worse than The Knife of Never Letting Go?
Not as good as The Knife of Never Letting Go, but still pretty fantastic.
Quite similar though.
Yeah, yeah, very similar.
Totally different, but also similar.
I prefer the way that The Knife of Never Letting Go is written, like the sort of run-on sentences and like the internal monologue, whereas Hugh Howey writes very precise, you know?
Yes.
I prefer the sort of internal monologue and the messiness of his own thoughts and all that to the sort of crisp, clear-cut, this is how this person was feeling, this is what happened, and this is how they dealt with it, and things like that. So it depends on what you like, I think.
I think there's story-wise. There's so many different people, like, I think it would be quite difficult as a writer for him to come up with, like, internal monologues for all of them.
Yeah,
and I
think,
like, with Juliet, she's a bit of a Katniss character, one of the women in it. She's quite unlikable.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, so it would have been interesting to see how it'd do it through the internal monologue. But I thought in the first book, it's mainly women that are the main characters, and then you get more men coming through. But the women tend to be the heroes of the piece, I found.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, much all the men are shown to be flawed in one way or another, whereas the women kind of do the opposite. Like, they're flawed at the beginning and then they seem to kind of come into their own. But there's being he sold it originally for like 99p for the whole thing, like self-published on Amazon, and now there's like a movie in production.
Yeah, because there's it's really annoying, I can't take it off, because usually they put stickers on these books, and on my copies it says The Next Hunger Games. And they're actually printed on the cover, and I can't peel them off, and it's so annoying. It's like, no, it's not The Next Hunger Games. It's nothing like The Hunger Games.
It is The Next Wool, which is what it is.
It's like The Hunger Games in that it's a dystopian future, and that's it.
Yeah, they're not actually... That was how they advertised it on, like, train billboards and stuff, and it was like, yeah, they have some similarities, but not that many.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not The Next Hunger Games. It's the next dystopian future.
Yeah.
Because we love dystopian futures as a society. Everyone loves dystopian futures.
Societies that are fairly stable love the idea of dystopias because they're like, oh, it's so crazy. How could society get like that? And then we all secretly think, yeah, society could be heading that way. Our society is a little bit fucked up.
Yeah. I think it's that kind of thing, like, well, at least it's not as bad as that. Well, at least, you know, oh, it's not as bad as 1984, or it's not as bad as Brave New World, not as bad as The Hunger Games. No, but it's pretty shit. Like, for some people, it is as bad, but for us, like, I don't I mean, I don't know. I don't know how well these books sell in other parts of the world. But I would imagine a country where, or even in our country, like, somebody who isn't having a good time maybe wouldn't be like, oh yeah, dystopia, love it. Love to, like, investigate that shit. But I don't know. Maybe they, maybe people like to, everybody likes to think, oh, at least it's not that bad.
You sort of mentioned a little bit there, like, you started reading the second book and you were like, I don't remember what's going on. How is this read on from the first book? And I had a similar feeling this week about something. I started rewatching Orphan Black because season 3's happening and I can't remember what happened in seasons 1 or 2. So, have all of us here watched Orphan Black at this point?
No. It's been recommended to me by, like, about 60 different people, and as such, I can't be bothered to watch it. Okay. I feel like everybody's watching it for me. Sorry.
And we came to a junction, my husband and I, where, like, we'd finished watching Drop the Dead Donkey, like the 6 seasons of that. So it was like, okay, should we watch some of the things I've got in here? Like, oh, I've got Orphan Black. Should we try that? And then we ended up watching Carl Sagan's Cosmos instead. So, well, I still haven't actually started it.
In that case, considering this is my second time through watching, I'll try and sell you on Orphan Black then. So here is the crux of Orphan Black. The very opening scene is, hey, woman's returning to town where she used to live. She sees someone who looks an awful lot like her. I mean, exact same face, but very clearly differently dressed. Takes her shoes off, takes her bag off, jumps in front of a train. She's like, my goodness, I've just watched someone who is basically me throw themselves in front of a train. Her life's a little bit shitty, so she grabs the bag and runs. And she's like, right, I'm a little bit freaked out by how identical to me this person was. I've taken their ID. Let's investigate their life a little bit. And then it's this unraveling mystery of, hey, who are all of these people cropping up who look just like me? And, like, the main selling point of the show is that the same one actress plays at least half a dozen different characters. And the key strength of that show is that I know that these characters are all the same woman playing all of these characters. I constantly forget and have to remind myself of that fact. The acting job between characters is incredibly distinct. The makeup, the wigs, the way that the character is sort of made up, and their general personality, character traits, the way they hold themselves, the accents they use, are all very, very different. And different enough that, like, even watching it through for a second time, there are several characters that I constantly have to remind myself, oh yeah, that's kind of amazing that that is the same person who is that character. And it is just, hey, it's these interweaving narratives of these women's lives all interconnecting that are all the same actress. And it is just...
What's her name? Tatiana Maz... something?
Something like that.
She's in The Woman in Gold, which is a film with Helen Mirren in it. And whatever her name is from Orphan Black is Canadian, and, like, she speaks loads of other languages. Like, I think she spoke German and French before she spoke English. And she was played an Austrian woman in it, like a young Austrian Jew who was who was quite well to do and got chased out by the Nazis. And, like, Helen Mirren was okay in that movie, but I would rather have seen her, like, she was amazing in it. Like, I could not believe how good she was in that movie.
That is a really good strength of this. Like, I know just up into season 2, I haven't watched season 3 yet, but there's, you know, one of these characters she plays is, like, there's a posh American soccer mum, there's a someone who grew up in England but then moved to America and has got, like, a sort of English with American accent. There's a French, there's a German one, there's an Eastern European one. Like, there are so many different accents at play and so many different, like, so varied characters. I'm like, she's a stunning actress.
I have so much stuff to watch now. That is on my list. So is Daredevil. And
my main issue, like, my main issue with Orphan Black, like, recently I've been feeling very, like, patriotic.
For South Africa.
For South Africa, yeah. Like... What?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were for England.
No, I'm South African. No, I just like I've been here for a really long time, so I don't have an accent anymore. And like, but if you heard my parents still have like really strong accents. But anyway, I've been feeling really patriotic for South Africa recently, and I'm like on Pinterest. I'm looking at all these pictures of Table Mountain and Blouberg Beach and Robben Island, and Gordon Bay, and I'm like,
And this relates to Orphan Black because.
Yeah, anyway, because there's this one woman in it who's supposed to be South African, and she has the most atrocious South African accent
okay,
I've ever heard.
If you're
in
not
my
actually
life.
From South Africa, it's not that obvious.
Yeah, if you're not, if you don't hear a South African accent every day, then it's like it's pretty passable, but it's absolutely awful, like so bad. Like, I can't even like. She's supposed to be a proper, like, Afrikaner, you know? That's the intention that's coming across. And she's... Oh, it's horrible. Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, it's one thing when, like, blockbuster films get accents wrong, or even whole languages, as I saw when... I think it's Swordfish, which is a terrible film anyway for a lot of reasons. But there's a Finnish hacker guy in it, and it's like... His lawyer is Finnish as well, but the two have a conversation together and they talk German. Just like,
what?
It's completely baffling. It's because nobody knows what Finnish sounds like, so we'll just throw in some German because nobody speaks that either.
Very American-centric, like, I mean, I've seen a lot of American centricism, that word, around and like being called out and stuff, and it is amazing how many Americans do think they are the center of the universe. Like, and they genuinely think like, well, nobody would know what that is, and nobody would know what this is because we don't know what it is, therefore why would anybody else know? But I was also, it's obviously the 4th of July yesterday, and I was thinking about, you know, oh, it's a holiday for independence, and I was like, we don't really celebrate St. George's Day, like what do we celebrate? And I was thinking, like, the French celebrate Bastille Day, which is, you know, revolution. Scottish celebrate Burns Night, obviously the day of a poet, and also Hogmanay for New Year. And, you know, these holidays all have fireworks, and then 4th of July is big for fireworks. What's our fireworks holiday? Oh, we executed a terrorist.
Yeah, well, he tried to blow up the parliament, and we stopped
and
him.
Catholics, therefore, it's like... explaining it to an American on he was in London, and it was Guy Fawkes Night, and he was like, oh my god, there are so many fireworks everywhere. And I was like, yeah, we also burn an effigy of a Catholic guy because he tried to blow up Parliament. And he was like, oh,
it's like, yeah, this guy disagreed with the Parliament and was gonna like radically just be like, no, I disagree with Parliament, I'm gonna blow them up,
so
we're gonna blow him up for
500 years.
Yeah,
we've been burning an effigy,
like, for the rest of all time we will burn him alive.
It's so weird. And also trying to explain that to Americans is weird. The other thing is the wombles.
Oh god,
like, if
wobble
you've
up, wobble down, wombling wobble. Free the wombles of Wimbledon, common are we making good
we
use of the
Wimbledon,
things that we find, the things that the common folk all leave behind.
There was we were going to Wimbledon, like, we went for cocktails, and there's a really nice cocktail place in Wimbledon, and I was like, oh yeah, like, we have this TV show called The Wombles, and they're like kind of these bear things that like live around Wimbledon and pick up litter. And he was like, are you high?
So,
and it does sound weird.
So back to Orphan Black, my problem with it, coming back to it, which kind of
was Wombles.
I had a niggling complaint with it that has been present the second time through as well, which is, short version, it's a show about genetically identical clones in which some of the clones have very specific differences, and the implications are kind of that, like, hey, these things are not down to your genetics, these are to do with how you're brought up. And specifically, it's like, hey, one of the clones is gay and one of the clones is trans, but the rest of these genetically identical people are not gay or trans. And it's weird. I've seen multiple competing thoughts on it. Like, there are some people who are like, oh, well, you know, there's this plot point that's supposed to suggest that they're not completely genetically identical, and these things go on. But none of that's actually confirmed in the show. All that the show says is these people are genetically identical, yet this one's gay and this one's trans and the rest are not. And some iffy implications that are never really touched on properly by the show. I'm very curious to see what season 3 does with those, and if season 3 is going to make any attempt to canonize any of the things that people have theorized about that. So yeah, that's a thing that's still stuck in my head rewatching season 2. I'm like, this feels a bit weird. That being said, the trans character in that is fantastic, I think. So yeah. Rare example of a cis woman playing a trans man who does a stunning job of it.
Has anybody got any further on Sense 8?
I've watched up to episode 3 now. I watched a couple of extra episodes.
I think I'm on like 3 or 4. I am enjoying it. I think it's really good.
I'm enjoying it, but equally, like, there are long stretches of that show that feel like nothing is happening.
It's like an exhausting show to watch. You kind of have to watch. It's almost like a movie a day kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like I'm sitting down and focusing for that whole hour, and like, because it's jumping back and forth, I'm having to keep an eye on it, and sometimes nothing's happening and I'm still like, well, I better focus in case something important happens. Well, appears to have nothing happening. It's not a show I can marathon quickly, but while I'm watching it, I'm really enjoying the characters and the writing and the performances.
I think it's taking advantage of the space kind of left by like Lost and stuff and Heroes. It's got that kind of sense of epicness, like
it doesn't have any of the narrative pacing that those series had. Like, it's not giving you the narrative. It's not doing like what Lost and Heroes did, where like within the first episode you've got several good solid narrative hooks that are very quickly picked up upon in episode 2.
But they had to have that because that was standard. That was like once a week television. You can be a little bit different, I think, with Netflix. And whether it works, I'm not sure. But I think that's what they've thought is, oh, well, it's Netflix. People are going to watch 2 or 3 episodes at once. So we don't necessarily have to be like, oh, we need to keep people watching. We need to keep people watching. And also, you know, they get their money. I'm not sure how it works, whether they get their money based on views or what, or if it's just, here's the show, let's have our money. We don't actually care if anybody gets to episode 10.
It's an interesting idea, because it certainly makes sense to make things paced for Netflix. I hadn't really thought about that as somebody who has never watched stuff on Netflix. Yeah. I don't really... I could see that is kind of its own platform. And yeah, like, but, if a game is doing it, they would change the pacing, so why not for TV series?
The pacing for Netflix generally seems to be all to do with, like, hey, you can pace it however you want, but the end of one episode into the beginning of the next has to be very fast-paced, because it's themed around binge-watching, where it, like, because it's auto-playing the next episode and everything's out at once, it's very much like, oh, I hit the end of this, something big just happened, the cliffhanger is a couple of seconds ahead of me if I want to watch it, and it's automatically going to play if I don't stop it. That's generally what's paced around, is to give you a reason to just, like, not switch off until that new episode starts.
When I watch Orange is the New Black, if you try and watch that as a television show, like, if you try and watch it one episode a week, it's actually really hard to keep interested.
If you have
a long break in between, then it's really difficult to get back into.
Yeah, Orange is the New Black is next on my list after I catch up on Orphan Black and then watch season three.
Season 2 of Orange is the New Black, that was the one where it was literally like, okay, it's 3 a.m, I need to go to sleep, but I have to watch the next episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I didn't really get that with season 3, but with season 2 it was like, I needed to find out what was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I think season 3 was really aimless. Like, it didn't really have a
clear idea. Yeah, we talked about this last week.
Yeah, it didn't have a clear idea of where it wanted to go or what it wanted to do. And yeah, we did talk about this last week, so shut up.
That's okay. So what else do we have?
I am psyched for next.
Yeah, you're psyched for it. So other things I did this week. I re-listened to a bunch of songs from Steven Universe because I love Steven Universe. And I basically just realized, hey, the reason this show works so well is because you have a young, naive child as your central protagonist, meaning that you can have moral dilemmas that basically, with an adult protagonist, would seem stupid and benign, but with a child, you're like, okay, I can understand exactly why that seems like an appealing solution.
Like Bernard's Watch. And,
yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Bernard's Watch, but a little more...
Time travel is, like, dramatic with adults, but when you give, like, time travel to a kid, it's like, wait, let's see if they can, like, you know, get the first prize at school.
Yeah. Well, that's, like, basically, by giving this setting to a young child, it reins back the scope on their desires and their perspective of the world, while allowing the plots around them to scale up in scale, like in, by comparison, and it makes for a really nice contrast. So,
like Mona the Vampire.
Yeah, like Mona the Vampire, exactly.
Basically, kids shows are amazing.
Kids shows are amazing. I recently
Mona the Vampire was like ridiculous, though. Like she clearly, it was quite a bad show in that this girl clearly had paranoid schizophrenia.
Yeah,
and
she
it was
had some
like,
quite...
oh, let's make a show about yeah. her.
She had some quite serious mental delusions, and it was like, ah, it's yes! fine.
So... It took me a long time to realise it was her imagination, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think they should have just made her an actual vampire. Why did they have to make it her imagination? It was so much cooler that she was an
because
actual vampire.
Relatability and
girl.
Stuff.
It was not very well.
This does remind me, like, Dan Pierce actually tweeted recently, but, like, he'd rewatched an episode of Mr. Ben and decided to share that with the world. My goodness.
Mr. Ben!
That is what... I'd forgotten how messed up it is. And the weirdest thing is, like, I tweeted about how... and a number of other people did, like, tweeting about how weird it was. And there's somebody has a Twitter account called The Real Mr. Ben. And it's just responding to us, like, well, it's like... not perhaps not to everyone's taste, but each to their own, and these sorts of things. We got tweeted at by Mr. Ben.
I love that.
After having watched an episode and like thinking we were on some sort of trip or something.
Aww.
The thing is, as a kid, I used to like goose step to school, which is like not cool, but I was like, Mr. Ben does it. So he was promoting some bad ideas.
For the benefit of like presumably all non-Brits, Mr. Ben is a show about the titular character who is, I gather, he's usually sat around his house and decides, I'm going to do a fun thing. And he'll look outside his window, and in the case of this episode, he saw a bunch of kids playing like cowboys and Indians. So he decided, I'm going to see a film about this. But the cinema has too long a queue. And then he realizes, ah, but I can go to the costume shop I go to every week in order to be a cowboy. And what he does is he goes in and the shopkeeper appears just suddenly, as if by magic, and has exactly the right costume. So Mr. Ben goes into the changing room, does a quick change, and then suddenly a door appears. He goes through it, and then whatever he's put the costume on of becomes that reality. And he has an adventure in this space. And at the end of it, he changes out. Yeah. At the end of it, he changes out into his normal clothes. But the thing is, he never really leaves the costume shop. So he's just basically going to this costume shop, trying on an outfit for 15 minutes, and having some adventure. And he just leaves again.
See, the other side, like the other day, someone sent me a link to the theme tune for Tracy Beaker. And I'd completely...
No matter what I say...
Believe me now, I will win someday.
Those books were weird. Like, Jacqueline Wilson was quite an odd... Like, my sister sat next to her on a train once. She was so excited. But some of those books were weird. Like, Midnight? Did any of you read
that
Midnight?
Was
one of the later ones?
Yeah, Midnight's
fucked up. Like, I can't sleep.
Was one? Diamond Girls was pretty messed up as well.
A lot of her later ones. Like, Tracy Beaker was good. And, like, what was the other one? The Suitcase Kid. My sister read that. But because she was a social worker, obviously she and her books were designed for kids to read that were going through tough times so that they could read it. But some of them were properly dark.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was like, oh, you know, people in like abusive situations or like their pet, you know, one of them like had her mum who had mental illness.
Illustrated mum.
Yeah. But there was Double Act where the sisters like, they're twin sisters and their mum's passed away and like her older sister is kind of like a bully and is like, oh, we have to go down to like sneak down to London to do this acting and you have to be mean to our stepmom and stuff. And it like that one really scared me as well because I was always scared that my sister would bully me like that and make me go to London to audition for a play.
Now see, fun side story, my youngest sister, Amy, has a signed letter from Jacqueline Wilson because she wrote a story when she was about 12, being a big fan of Jacqueline Wilson's, and sent the manuscript of the story to Jacqueline Wilson, and she got like a handwritten letter back. And
oh my god!
So fun conclusion to that story. There is an awful lot of similarities between that story and a story that Jacqueline Wilson wrote 3 years later.
Oh my
God. So my younger sister is pretty convinced that Jackson Wilson stole the story from her. Yeah, I can't remember what the story's about. I will update before next Geek Night In. I will check with her. I'll be like, well, which of the Jacqueline Wilson stories is it that ripped off your book?
There was one called The Worry Website, which I have a really nice hardback copy of. And there was a girl who actually wrote, she took submissions, and it was like they wrote the last chapter, and it was like all these kids in this class, and they each had their own problems. Like one of them, her parents were splitting up, and one of them, like, he fancied a girl, and then the other one, no one liked her, and stuff like that. And then at the end, it had like this girl who had was in like an abusive family, and then she finished it off with like, she was like, it was going to be the last one in the book, because it's quite dark, I put the next something a bit happier at the end, and it's like you care, mate, you're well like all your stories are fucked up, and they just give me nightmares.
I remember
it's dark.
The one that I couldn't remember, I can't remember the name of it, but it used to really freak me out. Lola Rose. Where they think that her mum is pregnant, and then it turns out that she's not. And that used to really freak me out when I was younger, because I read it when my sister was really little. And it really freaked me out that something was going to happen to my sister. So I used to go check on her in the night and be like, you know, oh, is she okay? And my mum would be like, oh, she's got a bit of a cold. And I'd be like, Jocelyn!
Some of those books were dark.
Now, I back to my point about Tracy Beaker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot how, serious a show that was. Because, for something that was, a children's sitcom, it was ostensibly like, hey, here is a child in the care system who has an abusive, unreliable parent that, her entire life is just fantasizing about this, building up this perfect parent in her head, because she's like, I can't admit to myself how much of a failure my parent is. And looking back, I used to love that show. I had a really unreliable father, and I'm just looking back being like, yeah, I can see why I related to some elements of this show, of being like, yeah, my parent's great. No, I'm not going to admit that they're useless and that they never turn up when they promise they will. So that
long as well. She did loads of books.
Yeah. Tracy Beaker is like, I can see what the appeal is in Jackson Wilson stuff, because she did a lot of stuff where it's like, hey, here's a situation we don't often talk about that kids have to go through.
There was one called Love Lessons, where basically the two main characters are a girl and a boy, and the girl is in love with the boy, and the boy falls in love with another boy from his school. And I remember reading that, and I was like, oh my god, at the time I was like, I read this when I was about 12 or 13, and I went to this book club, and we all read it at the book club, and everyone was like, oh, I think it's disgusting, I think she's gone way too far, and I was like, yeah, me too, and actually I was like, boys like boys, and maybe that means that girls can like girls, and it was like the first chapter in my lesbian, bisexual, pansexual exploration, whatever.
It was you're making symbols with your hands. I'm imagining it's a sphere. It's a sphere of experience.
It's a flower. It's opening.
That looked more like evil, fangs Venus and claws. Trap. Yeah, it's like a Venus flytrap. The Venus flytrap of your LGBT experience is opening up, ready to snap down on the heterosexuality.
Sounds about right.
And slowly digest it.
Jacqueline Wilson was such a huge part of my childhood, and I think I have, her books can be proper dark at some points, but I think I have a lot to thank her for in terms of, her writing her first LGBT character when she did. That was massive for me when I was growing up. It was huge.
Right. And before we finish up, I think Kate's got one story for Gemma about lightsabers.
Yeah, okay, so it's kind of weird, this one. At work this week, we had an engineer come in to fix the tills, the printers for the tills. And he arrived at 8 o'clock in the morning and was supposed to go, within a few hours. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he left. He was completely weird, like, spent the entire time just wandering around. We were like, he's not doing anything. Like, he hasn't done anything for 40 minutes. He's just wandering around. Why is he here? And me and my friend who works there, we got into a huge argument about The Mummy and whether The Scorpion King was the second or the third movie. I was right. It's the second. And then we were talking to him about it. And he, like, was like, oh, yeah, because then this happens. And then they get the Spear of Osiris. And then he knew, like, the entire plot. And I was like, this guy's a nerd. So I was talking about Nine Worlds. And he, like, didn't seem that interested in Nine Worlds. So I was like, well, you're not my kind of nerd then. But then we were talking about lightsabers. And I don't know if this is true, because he did seem like... He was basically, like, the kind of guy who would be at the beginning of a horror movie being like, don't go down there. Nobody come out from there in 30 years. Like, he was that kind of guy. So take this with a pinch of salt. But he was like, oh, they're trying to invent lightsabers. And, like, where the battery packs, like, it's, like, the battery is, like, 3 atoms wide. And they, like... ionize, like, electrify the atoms. I was like, okay, I don't know physics, so I'm just gonna believe you, and put it into a battery pack, and then it can, like, charge the photons and be a lightsaber that will actually cut through things. So when that happens, Gemma, you should be first in line.
That doesn't sound like a real thing to me.
Well, he was weird. Like,
science.
The science sounds dubious.
I don't know, I thought that sounded perfect to me. I was like, oh, I was getting really excited.
Yay!
You could tell the difference in, like, nerdisms, if that makes sense. Gemma and Kate are like, that doesn't make sense. And me and Kate are like, oh my god!
Yay!
Gemma and Laura, sorry. Me and Kate are just like, oh, I like lightsabers!
My boyfriend told me that if you put copper coins, like pennies, in brown sauce, it would heat them up. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, no, you idiot. If that happened, we wouldn't have an energy crisis. I was like, oh, okay, I just didn't know. Like, maybe.
Like, I don't really get science, so I just believe what people tell me.
At the moment, he's trying to convince me that the sun is the nearest star to the Earth, and I'm like, nah, mate. Nah,
that one's true.
No, it's not.
And how come the moon is bigger?
Pardon?
How come the moon is bigger?
The moon is closer, exactly. Not bigger, and it's not a star.
It's a moon. It's a lump of rock relative to our position.
Yeah.
Me and Tilly are like team literature. We will talk about books, and we like our fantasy physics. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. We have to establish this. You are aware that the sun is a star.
Yeah, I know it's a star.
Yes, I know it's a star.
Well, what star do you think is closer than the sun?
Like, I don't know. Stars that are like, I don't know, that Jeff's a star. I don't know.
Jeff.
But, like, surely it's just. Because then he was trying to explain to me, like, oh, in our solar system. And I was like, so is there only one star in our entire solar system?
Yes. Like,
and why is it called a star system?
Because solar is the derivative from sol, meaning star. Well,
then why are they stars and not solars?
But, well, it is referred to as sol.
Ah, I win.
Gemma, it's okay. We understand. And their lack of understanding is not going to affect their lives in any way, so it's fine.
It's like when Sherlock didn't know that the Earth revolves around the sun. It's like, it doesn't affect us. We understand it or not, it happens. So,
That was nonsense, because it would come up at some point in his clue finding. Like, there'd be like, oh, but the shadow wouldn't be cast here because... Someone.
Well, no, all he needs to know is how shadows are cast. He doesn't need to know why the Earth plays a role in that.
Oh, Sherlock Holmes is an idiot, then.
Yeah, he is. Anyway.
Excuse me.
Now's a good time for us to wrap up. That's going to be the episode title, Now Sherlock Holmes is an Idiot. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. Time to do self-promotion. Tilly, where can people find you and the book you're writing?
I'm at Gathering Tilly on Twitter, and you can find my book at patreon.com/valencekiller. It's starting to take shape now. It's like a proper book. I read it through the other day and it took 90 minutes.
It's over halfway done. It's like, how many words is it at now?
50,000.
50,000 words. Yeah. And for like $1 a month, you could read 50,000 words.
That's how many too many for you?
It's 49,000 too many.
So yeah, what about you, Kate? Where can people find you and your things on the internet?
At the moment, it's all a bit quiet on the Western Front because I'm literally just reading Game of Thrones all day, every day, so I can get this. It's like just over a month until Nine Worlds. You do realise that.
It's like 6 weeks.
Yeah, and that's that is not enough time for me to get this stupid talk done.
It's not enough time for me to plan 8 talks.
Well, fair enough. So that is, but I am at the Geeky Gender UK and at what Katie underscore did. My Twitter is private at the moment, but please do request a follow, because unless you are somebody that I want to be employed by, I will accept you.
That's like, if you have in your Twitter bio, like, men's rights activists, I hate all women, maybe you won't get allowed to follow, but...
Yeah, no, fair enough. That, basically.
And what about you, Gemma? Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find my Twitter profile, which has mostly just been filled with pictures of the Lego I'm building, at Raygun Goth, and that tends to be my handle for everything else, other than YouTube. But if you do a search for Raygun Gothenburg, then you can find my City Skylines Let's Plays.
Fantastic. And then you can find me at Laura K. Buzz on pretty much everything. So Twitter, Patreon, YouTube, iTunes, Laura K. Buzz. Thank you very much for listening. We'll have another episode for you again next week. Bye.
Bye. Say goodbye.
Oh, bye.
Bye. Bye. Sorry. Bye.